You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We're going to get right into our 7-7 top headlines. So Baylor takes the South region, securing a Final Four spot with an 81-72 win over Arkansas. Kev, pretty exciting stuff last night.
Yeah, it was, and you know what? This game in the beginnings looked like it was going to be over really, really early on, but the Arkansas Razorbacks found themselves with a Houston Rockets-esque moment back when the Rockets played the Warriors, missed 27 straight threes. It wasn't quite that bad for Arkansas, but it was bad enough to help Baylor hold them off, and you said it, they move on out of the South.
Yeah, Maceo Teague leads the Bears with 22 points in that game. And Kevin and I will break that down in our next segment. Also want to mention Houston shut down Oregon State, but the Beavers covered. Let's go. Better's happy this morning with an insane three-pointer from Oregon State at the end of that game.
Better's, i.e. you. Dog of the day, though, still running hot, and you love to see that. And for
pressure's
Oregon
on.
State, I think ultimately the 17 points in the first half, look, that was really enough there. I know the game was competitive in the second half. It was incredible. Yep. They were actually dogs to win the second half despite being down 17. You don't typically see that in a live spread. They were supposed to be left for dead. Credit to them for coming back and hanging, but that slow start obviously did them in.
Yeah, no, I feel like that was kind of the determining factor, and they crawled back, but the Razorbacks also kind of crawled back at a point, and we'll talk about that again in our next segment. Let's switch it over to the Women's Elite Eight. So UConn takes down Baylor 69-67 to make the Huskies 13th straight trip to the Final Four. 19-0 run for UConn in that game. Paige Beckers could be our hero of the night. We'll find out, but she ends with 28 points. I was actually more glued to this game at the time as opposed to the Oregon State game.
Can't blame you. It was a treat. A 1-2 in the Riverwalk region. And this right here, a lot of people said, how is this a 1-2? How is this not a 1-1? A couple of excellent teams. And Paige was sensational. She is going to become, I think, one of the stars of the college game. And not just one of the women's stars, not just one of the stars of the college game, which is incredibly exciting. Some people wondering if she might be the driving force in changing the fact that these ladies have to stay for 4 years before entering the WNBA.
Yeah, and I know a lot of players in the WNBA have actually come out and said she's going to be the best of all time, potentially. So kind of exciting to keep an eye on her. But let's switch it over to the NBA. Clippers roll the Bucks on their home court, 129-105. Giannis, 32 points, just not enough. The Clippers, mind you, also without Paul George last night. Best win of the season by far for the Clippers last night over the Bucks.
Yeah, I have to agree, right? Paul George out right before this thing was going to get underway. And you got to think at that point, people running, let me grab the Bucks. That didn't work out. 129-105. I mean, they dominated them. And Giannis was a game worst, minus 31, despite scoring 32 points for Milwaukee. This is the type of performance that you look in the mirror, you go, oh, boy. They've now lost three games in a row. Back to what's going on with the Bucks again?
I know. I feel like we always kind of find ourselves having that conversation. They just lost their last game to the Knicks when they had sat the majority of their starters to then go play this game, and then they drop it. Terrible, terrible loss for them. And quickly, just want to welcome in our radio audience. You're listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM Channel 204 for Kevin Walsh. I'm Erin Dolan, talking about our top headlines. Also in the NBA, Steph Curry goes off in his return to the floor for the Warriors. 32 points, 5 boards, 6 assists, and a 116-102 win over the Chicago Bulls. Steph Curry was much needed for the Warriors back on the floor.
Yeah, look, here's the deal with Steph. He's not going to win MVP, nor should he. The team's below 500. But it's a case that you'd listen to if you were sat in a circle and everybody was just going to throw a bunch of names out. I mean, his value to this team is undeniable. By far and away, their best player. And for years of Golden State torturing this league, I don't want them to miss the play-in game at the minimum, because I want to see Steph in a single elimination scenario. It would be delightful.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Let's continue with our top headlines. Moving over to the NHL, favorites and dogs split 3-3 with Islanders Penguins closing pick'em upset for the Oilers, the Jets, and Sharks over 4-3. But it was the Buffalo Sabres who dropped their 18th straight game. Now, Kevin, I tweeted too early. I said that I was throwing in the towel with the Flyers. They ended up coming back, winning this game 4-3 in overtime. Still a terrible game for the Flyers, but for the Sabres, 18th straight loss.
Yeah, my father's a Flyers fan, and I saw him as he was going up to bed. He goes, what's wrong with my team, kid? I go, I don't know, they stink. Neither of us knew that at the time, the Sabres, though, were stinking at an unbelievable level and blew this 3-goal lead. 18 straight? Like, the Houston Rockets got to be watching Buffalo Sabres games and thinking, yeah, you go get them, boys. Go out there and lose more than 20 so we don't have to feel as bad about ourselves.
We might have to give an award for the worst losing streak of the season across all professional sports. We'll definitely have to do that at some point. Let's switch over to the UFC, though. McGregor Poirier to be finalized for UFC 264 on July 10th, according to many sources. Nothing is signed just yet, so we can't get too excited, but all three parties apparently are optimistic to get it done. This would be so exciting to see a rematch, Kev.
Yeah, this is big stuff here, and the odds are going to be drastically different from the last time that they faced off. The last time that they fought, Erin had the, you know, dog and all this.
I had Dustin Poirier. Kev was all over McGregor.
Crazy. We can't do that again. Hopefully the value is on Connor this time. Exciting stuff, though.
Yeah, we'll see. Coming up next, we're going to talk all things Elite Eight. Stay with us here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line. I'm Erin Dolan, joined by my co-host, Kevin Walsh. We're talking all things college hoops now. So, of course, the Elite Eight. We had two games last night. We have two games tonight. And then this weekend on Saturday, we're going to have the final four games. But let's start off with some recap. Oregon State, Houston. Houston took the game and ran with it. 17-point lead for the Cougars at half. Then the Pac-12 enemy started to come back to life. Oregon State comes back with a 44-point second half after being, of course, held to 17 points in that first half. They cover a 7.5 or 8-point dogs, depending on where you placed your bet. 14-1 against the spread in the last 15 games for the Beavers. We can thank Maurice Kalu, who had an insane 3-pointer to help Oregon State bettors. But it is Houston that advances with a 12-6 run to win 67-61 and advance to the Final Four. Game went under for those that grabbed it at 1:30.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's so crazy, but Oregon State ended up deserving this cover because this thing was tied with less than 4 minutes in the game. Folks, you know, that have heard me chat about my bracket, and I know I still can't believe I became a bracket guy. It was like, oh, my bracket's doing great, but it is doing well. I needed Houston to win this basketball game, and I mentally had turned it off because I was like, well, obviously they're going to win. And then it was tied 55-55 with less than 4 minutes. I'm like, oh no, this might get bad. This Oregon State team has continually found a way. You know, we've not been following the Oregon State run, right, the entire way, because they weren't supposed to be here. They weren't supposed to be in the tournament. Aaron, the last game that they had trailed at half was a game against UCLA in their first Pac-12 conference tournament game, which they proceeded to send to overtime and ultimately win, and then they would go on to win the Pac-12 conference tournament. It speaks volumes to this Oregon State team. Had they lost to UCLA, they are never in the NCAA tournament. They were an auto bid team. They didn't have the resume, and they parlayed that overtime victory all the way into a trip to the Elite Eight, and with under 4 minutes left on the clock, they were tied with a 2-seed and an opportunity to advance to the Final Four. It was a phenomenal run from the Beavers.
Yes, it was. And honestly, if they won this game, the Cinderella story would have continued. But just coming out of that Midwest region, the top part of that, for Oregon State, yes, is insane. I mean, we had Illinois in that, Loyola Chicago, just looking at the bracket right now. Of course, all these teams are already knocked out. But it was just, I personally didn't see Oregon State coming out of this and even making it to the Elite Eight game, so obviously credit to them. But I want to switch it back to right now. Let's talk about Houston. So Marcus Sazer, he ends with 20 points. Quentin Grimes, 18 points. Houston goes 11 of 32 from the three-point line, shooting a terrible 32% from the floor. But they did shoot 67% from the free-throw line, which was also pretty terrible. So the one thing that kind of surrounds this team is that how bad they've been from the three-point line. That's definitely going to be something that they need to figure out before they go into that Final Four game.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, what saved them was their aggressiveness on the glass, and mainly the offensive glass. 19 offensive rebounds. They took 15 more shots than Oregon State. Oregon State shot above 45% from the floor by the time this thing was finished. Their 11 of 20 shooting night from the free throw line will have them tossing and turning. Now, Houston's wasn't much better. 16 of 24 is really nothing to be pleased about, but it was at least better than the 11 of 20 performance that Oregon State had put forward. Houston's in a really interesting spot, Aaron, because I've talked about here on the show that, look, let's not, you know, take all the credit away just because they've played some close games. And that is true, but now we evaluate them. They're the first team in NCAA tournament history to play like four double-digit seeds. And they did that, you know, within their first four games. It's not like they showed up to the Final Four or the title game and got a fortunate matchup there. And you know what? They were great against Cleveland State. That's a 15 seed. I could not care less. And they completely dominated Syracuse. And that's notable, but it's still an 11. But they had to pull off a miraculous comeback against the 10-seeded Rutgers and were tied with under four to go after being up by 17 against this 12-seeded Oregon State team. It is starting to become fair to question Houston and how good are they actually playing, because one of the things you'll notice when you start to, you know, do your research and things like that, it's like, oh man, this team's been covering against the spread. Everybody's winning. Everybody's hot. Everybody is on a streak right now in this tournament. But the quality of basketball for Houston, I think it is now starting to become a fair question.
Yeah, and speaking from a betting perspective, like you said, everybody in this tournament right now is hot, going to be on a win streak. The Cougars are on an 11-game win streak, going 7-4 against the spread in their win streak. Cougars are also 14-6 against the spread in the last 20 overall as a favorite. They've also hit 76 or more points in seven of those outings that I just mentioned. But just considering that they are struggling from the three-point line and they're going to go against the nation's best shooting team, basically the Baylor Bears, I'm a little worried for this game, and I think they might be exposed finally.
Well, that's really Houston defensively, then, is going to have to show up. And Houston has some great defensive performances under their belt in this tournament. They held Rutgers to only 2 points over about the final 5 minutes of that game. Again, Syracuse is 46 points. You could be like, ah, Syracuse, Buddy Boeheim, they're not good. It's the fewest points any team has scored in a tournament game. Less than Drexel, less than Abilene Christian. And even here, the 17 points that they held Oregon State to was phenomenal. So their defense is going to have to bring it against Baylor. You know, there's some early lines available for that game. That total looking like it's going to be around that mid-130s kind of number. That feels like a Houston score. That feels like the Cougars dragging Baylor down into the mud and fighting at their level, which would be ideal for Houston. But if Baylor gets any kind of hot, it's going to potentially be a long night for the Cougars.
Yeah, they either shoot lights out, like you're talking about, from the three-point line, or they kind of struggle a little bit. But obviously, with Houston's defense, that could change a lot of things in terms of the total. I know a ton of these games have been going under. But let's switch it over to another game that happened last night, Arkansas versus Baylor, since we obviously brought up Baylor. I guess the spoiler, if you're waking up this morning, is that they did win this game. They won 81-72. The Bears cover 7.5 over Cashes. And for those that took their first-half money line, like we suggested yesterday here on the early line, -4, that cashed for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first half, I'm surprised they weren't up double digits. Arkansas's ability to get down double digits is incredible. I mean, what are you guys
doing?
But
they always crawled back. That's why I got to take the first half.
They had the ball down four and had a great look at a three that would have cut this thing to one. And Baylor would have had to call a timeout. You have to make your opponent feel it. And they never did. They never made Baylor feel, even though it was down to four, even though it was down to six, they never hit that next three to make Baylor call the timeout, make Jared Butler look at Davion Mitchell, who looks at Mark Vitale. That never happened. They just went ice cold. They had missed 10 straight shots from the floor. They were only in it because they were able to get to the free throw line. You want to give them credit for competing, but you can't get down almost 20 points to a team as good as Baylor. You're asking yourself to have to do way too much work than in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, they trimmed an 18-point lead to 4 points, hitting 10 of 11 shots to pull within 44-38. But just the Razorbacks, like you said, getting down 18 points to a Baylor team, there's the shot of you coming back and actually winning is pretty unlikely. And, I mean, they didn't even cover in this game. So Baylor obviously realized Arkansas is creeping back, and then they went off. And they were hot from the three-point line, which also helps them.
Yeah, and I think for Arkansas, Note fouling out is one of those things that their fan base will probably remember for quite some time. He was their leading scorer when he fouled out. He finished tied for the lead points in this game, the SEC's sixth man of the year. He picked up his third foul with 14 minutes and 25 seconds left on the game clock. He fouled out with 13 minutes and 38 seconds left. How is that possible?
Yeah.
He probably should have went to the bench at 14:25. Certainly should have been able to foul out. That was a big, big turning point.
Yeah, Kevin and I will talk more about this game right after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line. I'm Aaron Dolan, joined by my co-host Kevin Walsh. We want to stick a little bit with this Elite Eight recap, Arkansas-Baylor. So Baylor last night shooting 53% from the three-point line on 8 of 15 shooting, shooting 48% from the floor as well. Now, from a betting perspective, the Bears have not lost a game this season when they allow fewer than 70 points. And, of course, the Razorbacks, they had 71 last night. They actually averaged 70 points in their last two nail-biter wins. So just something to keep in mind as we prepare for their next game against Houston. But just overall, Kev, we don't have the lines completely up right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook. Sure. Still waiting since there's some maintenance going on. But I feel like regardless of the line, the Baylor Bears get it done in this spot. I think Houston has had way too many close games. They've let teams come back. I think your Baylor Bears, like you predicted, might make it to the national championship.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll be in a real good spot if they do. So that would be very exciting. The reality of that number, and I think it opened up around 4.5-5 for Baylor, is it feels like a lot of people are going to want to bet the Baylor Bears. It feels like a lot of people who kind of make their own projections, if this number gets up to 6, they're almost going to have to play Houston based on a numbers game. I think one of the numbers that I'm going to be excited to see at some point is the rebooked most outstanding player market. And we'll give you a full breakdown of that market later on in the week on this show, because I want to update it, you know, kind of take things where we were and see who's left and who still has the value. But Davion Mitchell's first half performance, where he had more fouls than threes, was probably the most convincing performance that any Baylor Bear has put off, because the gap between when he was on the court and when he wasn't was abundantly clear that he's right now this team's best and most important player. Look, Jared Butler was tremendous, back, you know, Big 12 Player of the Year. I get it. I got it. Good. Davion Mitchell out there, anytime that he was on the court, was comfortably the best player. And Aaron, whenever we get reposted most outstanding player markets, at the minimum, Davion and Jared Butler need to be at the same price, if not Mitchell booked as a bigger favorite.
Yeah, we'll talk about this market a little bit more in our next couple of segments. But those are the two elite games that happened last night. Now we have Houston and Baylor heading to the Final Four. Let's switch it over to the two previews we have for the Elite Eight tonight. Gonzaga versus USC. I'm most excited for this matchup out of all four of these games. So Gonzaga looking to be the first unbeaten team to win the national championship since 1976 to get it to the final dance. They need to beat USC in advance to make it to the Final Four. But Kevin, a lot of people thinking USC could potentially give them a run for their money.
Yeah, I think part of that reason, Aaron, is just how incredible USC has been playing. So if I remove Gonzaga's, you know, performance over Norfolk State, and respectfully to Norfolk State, it was a 16 seed. That is not a relevant level of competition. Gonzaga has won on average their last two games by 17 points. Domination. Covered both of those games.
Yep.
USC's three games: Drake, Kansas, Oregon. Nothing to sneeze at. All, again, I think comparable levels of competition with, say, the Creighton and Oklahoma opponents that Gonzaga played. USC is winning on average by over 20 points per game in this tournament. You could argue that up until this point, USC has been the most impressive team of anybody in the Big Dance ever.
Yeah, and USC has shot 54.8% in NCAA tournament wins, like you just mentioned, Drake, Kansas, Oregon, to reach the Elite Eight for the first time in 20 years, including in this tournament, already making 21 of 35 three-pointers. That's 60%. So if somebody is going to compete with Gonzaga's offense that can score, obviously, best in the nation, they have all the pieces to win this entire thing. But you mentioned something yesterday about USC and their defense, or it was a number about maybe it was their offense, but something that would really compete with Gonzaga.
Yeah, so according to KenPom, historically, Gonzaga is the greatest two-point offense ever. Well, they just so happen to be playing, according to KenPom, historically, the greatest two-point defense ever. And these are things that compute. You watch what Gonzaga does in transition, Drew Timmy's ability to play below the basket, Jalen Suggs' ability to finish. And then you look at what USC does, and having the Mobley brothers, and specifically Evan Mobley, who we've mentioned on this show a number of times, is not just a great pro prospect, but is a tremendous college basketball player and is dominant when out there on the floor. This is an all-world defense playing an all-world offense. We've wondered, what is the formula? What is the recipe to beating Gonzaga? Do I need to score, you know, 100 points, or is there a world at which I could hold them to 65 and come away with a win?
Yeah, and what's interesting is yesterday when I was doing some research, I was reading that Gonzaga saying that they're trusting their defense heading into their matchup. Can you talk about their defense compared to their offense? Obviously, they're amazing on offense. We know this. They have the trio. They have everything they need. But compared to their defense, how do they stack up?
It's a great point, and I think this is the reason why we sit here and we view this Gonzaga team as a historic group. I think these are always valuable because we can compare them up against one another. USC has the fourth best defensive efficiency in the country, according to KenPom. Gonzaga has the seventh. I mean, that is horrifying.
They have the number one.
Yeah, I mean, they have the number one offensive efficiency. You expect that. The fact that Gonzaga would check in top 10 on both ends of the court is what gets this team to the level that they are currently at. Is they are more than just, you know, up and down, good on the offensive side of the basketball. No, they've been a complete team all year long.
And for them to beat this USC squad, obviously in their previous game against Creighton, they led by as many as 27 points. But they didn't just come out and take that lead by 27 points. Creighton hung in there a little bit just in that first half. I mean, they wasn't going down to the wire with Creighton. But what do they need to make sure they don't do in this game? They obviously can't let USC get a lead.
Right. So I think what's going to be really interesting is the USC offense. Gonzaga is almost guaranteed to get to at least the mid-70s. They're that good. Maybe even the 80s, right? But you have to wonder, is USC's offense going to potentially play well enough to match that kind of number? How much can USC put forward on the offensive end? Unless they truly could stifle Gonzaga, here's the interesting thing with USC. We've talked about regression for some of these teams and what they've done from beyond the arc. USC in this tournament is shooting above 50% from three. A team that ranked outside of the top 120 in the country in three-point shooting percentage has been firing, and really over their last two games, hitting 60% combined over the Kansas and Oregon game. That is potentially going to be the biggest shift point here. If USC continues to knock down 50% of their threes and playing defense at the level at which they are, you can make an argument that they are as good as literally any team in this country, and that's what they'll need to be playing Gonzaga. But if they go cold, well, that's going to be very
totally different conversation.
Absolutely.
Yes, no, definitely. I hope that they obviously stay hot so we have a great game. But let's switch over to the betting perspective. So the Zags laying 9. Usually we see them laying double digits, so it's interesting to see a 9 here. The total at 153.5. And looking at where the money is right now on oddsfire.com, I'm seeing 63% of the money, 67% of the bets on Zags at minus 9. Then for the money line, 88% of the money on Gonzaga to win. I always wonder, like, who's betting that huge number? You must be rich. Then for the total, it's actually split in terms of percentage of money and percentage of bets at 50% right now. So that's actually interesting. What do you think for that total right there? I mean, I know it's come down from 155.5 to 153.5, and the money's split.
Yeah, so we can talk about the side of the moment, but with the total, it is probably the bet of this game I feel most confident in. Now, confidence is fleeting. Okay, talk to me 5 minutes into this basketball game about what I'm confident in. But I like the first half over in this game. USC has scored 40 or more in the first half in all three of their tournament games. Gonzaga, of course, has. They've scored 43 or more in the first half of all of their tournament games to this point as well. But that's typically what their team totals check in at. That, to me, though, is relevant. USC has been getting out in these games offensively as good as they've been getting out on the better than they've been getting out on the defensive side of the basketball. So that is what interests me in this game. The total over the course of a full 40 is, you know, a big time number above 153, 153.5, 154. That number is going to continue to probably bounce around all day. I last night saw the first half total at 72. A couple of teams that have yet to hit below 40 in either of their first half scoring performances, right, which could get us into the 80s then. I'm going to take my chances with that, Aaron, and hope this game starts high scoring.
Yeah, no, I actually like that play. And I just want to mention the Zags have hit the under in two of their 320 games after going 7 over the previous 8. But let's switch it then over to the spread. So with the Zags laying 9, which is different than we see with the double digits, so maybe you want to grab USC. The one thing that troubles me, though, is like we've talked about, USC has been hot from beyond the arc, but coming into this tournament, they weren't. So obviously they're getting hot at the right time, which is important for people that are playing in March Madness, these teams. We always talk about whoever gets hot could potentially win this tournament. What are you going to do in terms of the side?
Yeah, and let me make this point because you mentioned it. We don't usually see Gonzaga lay single digits. It's the first time they're laying single digits since December 26th against Virginia. It has been forever. First time in 2021 that they're laying single digits. I think that USC is where I lean because of how good they've been playing, but boy, is it not ideal to be fading Gonzaga at this point in the year.
Kevin go with a dog. Love to see it. Coming up next after the break, we're going to talk more Elite Eight preview with Michigan versus UCLA. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line. I'm Aaron Dolan, joined by my co-host Kevin Walsh. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We are going to preview one more Elite Eight game that's on the board tonight. We have number one Michigan versus number 11 UCLA. So how's UCLA? I can't believe we're talking about them right now in the Elite Eight. They're coming off a win against Alabama. I was convinced that Bama was going to roll this team, and they didn't. UCLA surprising everybody, of course, winning in overtime. But according to KenPom, the Bruins are 34th in the nation in three-point shooting and are hitting 40% of their attempts so far in this tournament. Now, as for Michigan, they're finally showing us why they are number one seed, because a lot of people were thinking they were the shakiest out of the four before we even started this tournament. So how do you see this one shaking out, Kev?
Yeah, I tell you what, I would feel a lot more inclined to fade Michigan and double down. Oh, it's just one game. But it's not Bama. It's UCLA. And yeah, UCLA's been on this great run. Give them credit. They beat Bama in overtime as well, which is impressive that they didn't lose grip of the rope. Johnny Juzang fouled out of the game. How is Alabama not playing in this game? It is maddening to me that they're not playing in this matchup. But, you know, Michigan has to feel good about themselves and their opportunity here to at least be playing an 11 seed. All in all, I know, you know, careful what you wish for, but I don't want to hear, oh, I'd rather play Bama than UCLA. Like, stop that. It's nonsense with how good Alabama has been. I think the big question for me, at least when it comes to this Michigan squad, is can they continue to get some of these other guys to step up? Hunter Dickinson and Franz Wagner feel like that's who they're going to most consistently rely on, right? But we've had the Mike Schmidt game against Maryland in that Big Ten tournament. We had the Brandon Johns Jr. game. We had the Eli Brooks game. We've had these other guys step up, and that's what you need if you're going to go out there and win a national championship. Who is going to be the other guy for Michigan?
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that we should definitely take note of. And the one thing with Michigan that we have to bring it up now is obviously with Livers being out, I feel like everybody kind of counted Michigan out. So do you think that they got lucky in some of these wins? But, I mean, they just beat the Seminoles, who I had advancing to the Final Four, and they dominated them.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, but I made sure that we didn't fully dismiss Michigan on this show. Even if we...
No, you did, 100%. I was the one saying we should just dismiss them, and they're going to be knocked out. And I think I had them to the Elite Eight, but... Kev, you were spot on with that. Spot on with the Baylor Bears. Maybe the next KenPom.
No. Absolutely not. I'm not the next KenPom. I just know how to get out in front of a possible disaster of when you know that a take could blow up in your face. Because this was the thing. What was the game that had everybody being like, oh, I'm so done with Michigan? When they lost to Ohio State by one. And Smith had a shot at the buzzer, a legitimately decent look, even if it was insane that Juwan Howard didn't call a timeout, but and played for one, all of that notwithstanding. But Michigan only lost by one to an Ohio State team that was a two seed, went out there, lost in overtime to Illinois. Like it was not this like, oh, look how terrible they look kind of deal. Like that would have been a bad way to describe them. You know, picking against Michigan is because I thought Livers was still an important player to the team, and because I thought very highly of Florida State. Florida State was going to be a team, no matter where they landed at anywhere in kind of this deal, they were going to get heavy consideration from me to move forward and get themselves at least into an Elite Eight kind of spot, like I ultimately thought they did, like you ultimately thought they did. But yeah, this Michigan team is still a really, really good team. They and yet the main question next though is were they lucky? No, I don't think they were lucky. I think that they've just been a really well balanced team, and that's what we saw when they at one point had jumped Baylor in the futures market.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people also were taking into consideration the Big Ten had so many teams in this that they just could overlook Michigan as one of the other ones, but obviously proving a lot of people wrong. But let's switch it over to some player props, because Johnny Juzang is the Bruins' leading scorer, averaging 15 points per game, 48% shooting inside the arc, 35% outside of it. Do you have him on your player props markets, or do you like some other players from UCLA for tonight?
I think Johnny is worth a look. His points prop, I saw at 16.5. He had averaged 22.3 points per game in his first three tournament games. And remember, UCLA has the one extra game under their belt because they played in the play-in game, which makes this all... They won in overtime.
What a crazier.
What a preposterous thing that this team is still going. But he missed his points prop, or this would be number, last game because he fouled out. He still got to 13 points. But between overtime and possible foul shots down the stretch, he could have gone over this number in all of his games.
For sure.
So I think that Johnny Juzang is someone you could look to towards the over. He's been the best player for the Bruins up until this point in the tournament. I still cannot believe that they won an overtime with him not being available. But if you were going to look towards Juzang, I think his over points prop is probably the look.
Yeah, and so it's crazy that, again, that we're still talking about this, because I had Michigan State actually at this point to the Elite Eight and not UCLA. So I got crushed right there in that four game. But let's
when you just start clicking ahead, they advance it all. So you got it right, even if
I picked
you thought
the wrong
they were
Michigan
lose their first
team.
Game. Yeah, what are you going to do?
That's what I did. I picked the wrong Michigan team. But let's switch it over from a betting perspective. So Michigan laying 7, total 136 last time that we were able to see it on the FanDuel Sportsbook. UCLA 4-0 against the spread their last four games overall, no surprise. 4-1 against the spread their last five NCAA tournament games as an underdog. Over 4-1 in their last five games against a team with a winning record. As for Michigan, 18-7 against the spread in the last 25 games overall. The under is 12-2 in the last 14 games following a win. So right now, looking at oddsfire.com, I am seeing 66% of the money on Michigan to cover, 83% of the money on Michigan to win outright. Now, as for this total, I'm seeing 70% of the bets, 72% of the money on the over here. What plays do you like tonight, Kev?
This game is real tough to me. I put together a list of like 6-7 player props that, and I don't even love most of them, but I felt that both the side and the total in this game were a real challenge. I think you could make I think it's easier to make the case for Michigan because of how good they looked against Florida State. They're 19-8 against the number on the season. The fact that UCLA has needed multiple overtime wins to get to this point, I think it's much easier to make the case for Michigan. I also think we're going to find ourselves in a spot where, after a lot of people left Michigan for dead and threw dirt on them, and now everybody's like, oh, I love Michigan, slam Michigan, and that number is going to keep climbing, 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 right? I think the number has now gone from where it was 6.5 last night up into the 7, 7.5 range. So I would lean towards Michigan. This is, to me, though, a great live game here. If Michigan at some point is pouring it on, you look towards maybe getting, 10 double digits with the Bruins. We saw yesterday live betting on Oregon State, live betting on Arkansas. Both of those teams at points in that game probably getting 15 or more points. I know for a fact Oregon State was. Can you get UCLA in that same market? Yeah, quite possibly. And then if UCLA comes out hot again, and you never know with this team, they've been up by double digits in now three straight tournament games, well, then we could buy low on Michigan. Now, maybe it won't work, and UCLA just win in overtime again. But I think from a side perspective here, Aaron, I think it's a great live betting kind of matchup.
I'm going to be honest. From the side perspective for me, I'm going to feel so dumb if I bet UCLA and they get crushed. Or I'm going to feel so dumb if I bet Michigan and UCLA comes back, potentially wins, or somehow covers. I mean, obviously, after that Bama game, it's a toss-up for me. We can make a better case for Michigan 100%, but that's why they're the favorite, just like we can make a better case for Gonzaga over USC. But I'm torn with this game. It's honestly one that I kind of want to stay away from just altogether because I really don't have that like gut instinct of which one I want to bet. So why don't we, since I obviously was saying with my gut instinct not finding anything, let's talk about some more player props then and kind of get into some of those markets.
Yeah, so there's a couple of names that stand out. I will tell folks this. I've noticed that a lot of times for the points props, if you just, I have a feeling like, and I think there's going to be about 8 or 9 players listed on points props. I think if you bet all of them to the under, you'll probably come away profitable. But there's a couple of names outside of that strategy. We've already talked about Johnny Juzang. Hami Hakez, over 1.5 assists, has cashed in all 4 tournament games. I think you could take a look there. Jules Bernard of UCLA, over 1.5 threes. If you get it at enough plus money, I wouldn't be mad at taking a look there. He was 4 of 10 in his last game. If he keeps shooting threes at that kind of rate, I wouldn't have issue with that. Tiger Campbell, basically the opposite thought process. His prop bet on made threes is 0.5. Play it to the under. He's only taken 1 3 in his last 2 games. Like, you might be able to hit that number because he shoots 0 threes. 17 of his 30 games, he's actually made no threes, and he's made no threes in 9 of his last 13. And then 2 Michigan player props. I would look at over 1.5 threes for Eli Brooks. Last game was the first time since the Isaiah Livers injury that he didn't make multiple threes in a game. And then lastly, Franz Wagner's rebounds prop, 6.5, was checking in at plus money. And it's plausible you're buying the height here, as his rebound numbers have been increasing throughout the tournament. But it's plus money, so I don't mind the over 6.5. That's a number that's cashed in all of their tournament games. And he grabbed 10 in the last matchup. So those are a couple of player props, Aaron, that I would try to take a look at here. You know, play them for a couple of dollars and see how then you can watch this game develop live from a spread and totals perspective.
Yeah, I like them. And you make a great point about taking some of the unders on some of those players there. But that is our recap of the Elite Eight. We have USC Gonzaga again tonight. That's 7:15 p.m. And then the one that I'll most likely be asleep for, maybe see the first half, UCLA Michigan. That's at 9:57 p.m. Last night, the other game was the Arkansas-Baylor game. And I'm like, come on, just start the damn game. All right. Also, we have the Final Four, the one game set. We have Houston versus Baylor tomorrow. We will have, obviously, that other Final Four game. But quickly, just want to mention the NBA draft was announced. So that will be July 29th. NBA draft lottery will be June 22nd, and the draft combine will be from June 21st to June 27th. So who do you think is going to be that number one pick, Kev?
Yeah, it's going to be Cade Cunningham. He's going to be not Trevor Lawrence minus money, but he's going to be minus money to go first overall, no matter who wins the lottery. And I think that'll be the thing that you'll see. It'll be the first market that'll come available on the FanDuel Sportsbook is number one overall pick, and Cade will be minus money. We're not going to fade that. It's not worth it. But it's going to be really interesting to see what other markets that we get here and what kind of which players can start to gain steam throughout this process. We have a pretty good idea between Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, and Jalen Suggs. We get Mobley versus Suggs tonight. Who's going to be our top three? How do we handle the G League Ignite guys? Jalen Green, Dacian Nix. How do these players and their stocks continue to grow? What about some of the veteran players, right? Davion Mitchell, who I keep hyping up. I love watching Davion Mitchell play. What can Franz Wagner do during this run in the tournament, right? Does Moses Moody's awful shooting over the last 2 games, I think it was 6 of 30 in his final 2 tournament games, how does that work against him? Love the NBA draft, Aaron. Very, very fun to bet on.
Yeah, very fun. And of course, when those markets become available, we'll talk even more about them. But Cade Cunningham, no surprise, will probably go first. Stay with us here on the early line. Coming up next, we're going to give you our hero of the night.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line on Sports Grid and SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan, and it's now time for one of our favorite segments, Hero of the Night.
You know, I don't like being backed into a corner. I like options. But NCAA tournament is not leaving me really with options here. It is becoming clear. Yesterday, at the end of Houston, Oregon State got a text that said, Maurice Kalou, hero of the night. Yeah, you better believe it. Maurice Kalou was the hero of the night. Houston, Oregon State was preposterous. This game was over. This game was done. Houston, at the break, was laying 18.5 points. And then all of a sudden, Oregon State storms back, tie the game under four. And then the foul game was in play. And Houston was making, and Oregon State was only taking twos, and it just wasn't working out. Then there was an intentional foul that allowed Houston to get multiple cracks at the line, and they were making them count as well. Three of four made by Justin Gorham in the final 15 seconds had put the Houston Cougars up by nine. And depending on when you did your shopping as an Oregon State backer, you maybe had seven. You maybe had 7.5. You maybe had 8. Well, Maurice Kalou made sure it didn't matter which one of those numbers you had, because with 5 seconds remaining, knocked down the final shot of this game on a tough three-pointer that put them down 6. My favorite little thing about this is with 3.5 on the clock, Oregon State calls the timeout. You think there's a foul coming. All of a sudden, Houston backers, all right, we got 2 more free throws coming. Houston team total backers, we talked about that number, 68.5. I am convinced that the Oregon State coach called the timeout to tell his kids, don't foul, be proud of yourselves, let's go home, i.e., really what that meant was, hey, nobody foul, we're going to cover here, and our fans are going to love it. Congratulations to Maurice Kalou, a hero of the night on his way out.
I love it, and I feel like some of these players are going to be remembered from backdoor covering. Like, I'm going to remember this guy's name because of this. Stay with us here on the early line. Coming next, we're going to give you our headlines.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.